If you're interested in the history of abolitionism in Cincinnati, chances are you've heard of Lane Theological Seminary in Walnut Hills and the student-led debates about slavery that took place in 1834. But what do you know about the abolitionist movement that was happening just across the river in northern Kentucky? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A new documentary called Underground, Freedom Stories Along the Borderlands, looks at the growth of abolitionism in Cincinnati and northern Kentucky. The film will be screened Sunday, February 16th at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. And the Freedom Center is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Joining me now to discuss the film and some lesser-known stories about the fight for freedom in Northern Kentucky are Northern Kentucky University College of Education Director of Black Studies, David Childs, and amateur historian and Vice President of Echo Hall in Augusta, Kentucky, Chris DeSimio. Thanks so much for being here, David and Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Lucy. Always good to be here.
Great to have you. David, a lot of the abolitionist history in our region centers around Cincinnati and Ohio as a free state, which makes sense. Why did you and your colleagues at Northern Kentucky University want to really focus on both sides of the Ohio River?
Well, it's really important. One of the things we try to do is tell stories, little known stories that people do not know about. People don't realize that the Kentucky in Ohio region, particularly Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati, were hotbeds along the Underground Railroad. When people think about history, they think about other places and faraway places. But because Kentucky and Ohio were border states, Kentucky being a state where slavery was legal and Ohio being a free state, it became a very contested area crossing that Ohio River. And so there's so many stories that still need to be told. In fact, this is just really the start of some of the work we want to do. So it's really, really important work.
Yeah. Chris, tell us briefly about the history of Augusta College in Augusta, Kentucky, and the important role that it played in the abolitionist movement.
Augusta College started in the 1820s. It was a Methodist school, but you didn't have to be Methodist to go there. It was a private liberal arts college where you could learn chemistry and physics and logic and Latin. But it had an abolitionist bent to it. The students who were there frequently held, they had debating societies, and almost every time they took up the subject of slavery, they voted in favor of abolition, which, if you were in a slave state, was cause for alarm.
Fairly controversial.
Exactly. And eventually it caught up with the college. After the abolitionists got started and became more active, the Ohio abolitionists started coming across the river and stirring things up. That made more people worried than the slave rebellions in Virginia. That made people even more nervous. And there was just no appetite for it. And so in 1849, the president of the college, who was Stephen Foster's uncle, wrote an article that was published by William Lloyd Garrison in The Liberator. And in this article, he just took to task his fellow ministers, his fellow Methodist ministers who were slaveholders. He just crushed them. That article was published in January of 1849. In February of 1849, the legislature of the great state of Kentucky revoked the license, the charter of the college.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Wow. David, the film also tells the story of an anti-slavery newspaper in Newport, Kentucky. And I knew about the abolitionist newspaper in Cincinnati, but I had no idea there was one in Kentucky, too. Would Newport have been an even more hostile place for that kind of newspaper than Cincinnati was?
No, you sort of read my mind. I don't think Newport was any more hostile than Cincinnati. One of the things people should understand is that there was not a clear delineated line between a free state and a slave state. In fact, you had enslavers that lived in Ohio and owned slaves in Kentucky, owned enslaved people in Kentucky. And some of the streets actually are named after people that owned slaves. You know? So it was, in many ways, Ohio and Cincinnati in particular could be more hostile, especially after the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, when you had enslavers coming into Cincinnati to try to recapture people. Like the book 12 Years a Slave was all about that. And so, no, that's not, people should understand, we had black codes and black laws that restricted the freedom of African Americans in Ohio. Even free blacks had to be careful because they were second class citizens. So this idea that because it was not a slave state that it was somehow the promised land is a misunderstanding of history. So I'm always trying to make that corrective. But I think the press there and is a powerful testament to the abolitionist movement that was in Northern Kentucky, that abolitionist strand, that freedom movement right there in that slave state is really exciting and helps us understand what was going on both sides of the river.
Yeah. We're talking about a new documentary about the region's abolitionist history. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Chris, I want to go back to Augusta. You tell in the film, you tell the story of James Tomey, a man who grew up in a family of slaveholders. I want you to tell us a bit about him and the impact that he had.
Tomey was a son of privilege. His father was the wealthiest person in town. The home goes back to the early 1800s, 1809. His father came here from Pennsylvania, interestingly. And I, when I first heard that, well, wait a minute, that was a free state. Well, not necessarily. Like all of the other 13 colonies, Pennsylvania, New York, also had legalized slavery. They decided to end it gradually. The Tomey family came to the Ohio Valley. His father opens up a mill, and Tomey goes to Augusta College, comes to Cincinnati, and is part of the Lane debates. He was one of the chief organizers of the Lane debates. Tomey ended up talking his father into freeing his enslaved people. It was something that was so radical, since his father had tried to stop him from going to New York to tell the story of the debates. The speech that he gave at this meeting in New York in 1834 was titled "The Southern Slave Kitchen, the Sodom of the South." I mean, this is, the language is so colorful. Tomey comes back to the Ohio Valley, and his father is now convinced. His father, a slaveholder, realizes that he needs to do this. He needs to let go, which was hard. Most people who renounced slavery said, well, I'll free my slaves, but they have to go to Africa. They have to be colonized out of here. Tomey talks his father into freeing his slaves, which he did, one in January of 1835, and then the rest of them, like 15 of them, in January 1st, 1836. It was such a surprise. It was shocking that he announced their freedom. They didn't know what to do. At first, they were happy, but then they were worried. Like, what are we going to do for a living? How are we going to? And his father said, no, you can stay here and work for wages, and everything will be fine. We'll take you to the county courthouse. We'll get your free papers. And then in this letter, this was published in a newspaper in Vermont, of all places. That's how far this story rippled. They end up singing, you know, Hail Columbia, Happy Land, on their way to the courthouse. Roll the tape forward about 15 years. Harriet Beecher Stowe writes Uncle Tom's Cabin. She would have gone right past Augusta. She knew all these people. She knew Tomey. She had to have heard that story, because at the end of the book, when son of the Shelby, George Shelby, I think was his name, comes back and announces the same thing. It's the same pattern. Mm-hmm. They're freed. They're at first excited, then they're alarmed and they're confused, and they end up singing on their way to the courthouse. It's mm-hmm. Step for step, exactly the same thing. And all this because of James Tomey, who himself had to become a fugitive. He had to leave upstate Ohio because he had helped someone escape from Augusta.
Wow. That confusion that Chris just described, David, it reminds me of a part of the film where you talk about how slavery was really a lot more complex than people maybe realize. You look back and it seems very clear line. This was terrible and evil. But talk about the complexities that you explain in the film, that it was such a complicated time for so many people.
Yes. Enslavement varied by different states. For example, the state of Kentucky, you would not have seen the large plantations like we think about from the films, like the Deep South of Mississippi, where they were harvesting a sugar cane and large cotton plantations. In the Deep South, you would have sometimes had hundreds of enslaved people. And then, by the way, a person that had that many enslaved people was quite wealthy because they had to purchase all of those individuals, and then they had to house them and feed them and et cetera and so forth. But you would not have seen much of that in Kentucky. The enslavers might have had 10 slaves or 3 or 4. It didn't make it any less cruel. And they worked just as hard to retain when African Americans escaped. They worked just as hard to try to recapture them. But the complexities of slavery is something that I think the average person may not even realize. For example, there were some enslavers that allowed African Americans to work, to hire themselves out, like Henry Boyd. He was able to purchase his own freedom. And so it wasn't, now the institution of slavery should not be, I don't want to understate the cruelty and the brutality of it, but there were various degrees in terms of how the enslaver, how much freedom they gave, if I could use that word, their slaves. People could work. Some people could work. Some people, some were very skilled at carpentry or being a blacksmith, and they could purchase their family members. They were allowed to purchase their family members. It was often up to the enslaver's discretion. They could purchase their wives. And many times when you see an enslaved person owning slaves, people will say, oh, African-Americans own slaves. Well, that's a misunderstanding. They would purchase their family members so they could be free, then they would free them. Another complexity of enslavement is slavery in the New England area. In urban centers in the New England area, it's not going to look like it did in the Deep South. One fascinating aspect of slavery that's little known, and Alistine Turley, in her book, The Gospel, she wrote a book. I apologize. I cannot call the title right now, but she talks about all of these enslaved people in Kentucky that were, for example, a lot of them were ministers on horseback, circuit riders, and they had autonomy because they were ministers. And so they could go between border states freely. They were allowed to do that because they were spreading the gospel. And often they worked on the Underground Railroad. There was one minister that he had so much autonomy as an enslaved person, he never did escape because he could buy, sell, he could minister the gospel. He can go, as far as, Pennsylvania, from Kentucky and all over the South. And so it's much more complex than we realized then. Free blacks, every African-American in the South was not an enslaved person. You have free blacks. You have people that were business owners. It wasn't prolific, but you have people that were business owners, like Sarah Marion Fawcett. You have people that, and her husband, Peter. You have people that were doctors. And so there's my work as an educator is to tell people there's much more work that we need to do in understanding the American story as it relates to African-Americans.
And why is it so important to have people understand that history now? I mean, why is it important to you to have people today through this film have a clearer understanding of our region's role in this abolitionist history?
Thank you so much. I'm going to be a little facetious. That's such a softball question. I love that question. I really do. People know how I feel about the DEI efforts and the attacks on teaching African American history and the so-called divisive topics. My medium is my our tool is history. That's we wield that tool. You know, some people have the tool of law. Some people, and I'm also a painter, an artist, and so I try to find whatever God gifted me with to tell a story and empower people. Harriet Beecher Stowe, she couldn't get out there. She wanted to be out there and kind of stop some things, be on the sort of front lines, but she couldn't as a woman in those days. So she wrote. The medium of film allows us to tell the story, and so perhaps we'll hopefully we don't get to a place where laws are passed where we can't teach it, but films will last forever. You can go back and look at films that were created during Nazism when it was illegal, and we can still watch them today. You can look at films that were banned. You can look at books that were banned. We can still obtain them. And so films allow us to tell stories that maybe a textbook can't tell. And maybe if it's banned in the classroom, I'm a professor, and there's laws trying to stop certain classes from being taught. I teach classes on multicultural education, racism and sexism in society. I teach classes on African-American history, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so maybe there'll be a day where, hopefully not, that those classes are illegal. Film and the arts can kind of break through that. So that's exciting, and we want to do much more.
I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University College of Education Director of Black Studies, David Childs, and amateur historian and vice president of Echo Hall in Augusta, Kentucky, Chris DeSimio. A screening of Underground, Freedom Stories Along the Borderlands is at 6 p.m. on Sunday, February 16th at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. You can find a link to RSVP on our website, wvxu.org. David and Chris, thank you so much for your time today.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, film critic T.T. Stern Enzi is here to talk about some of his favorite films at the Sundance Film Festival. This is Cincinnati Edition.